police.
Achha,
now this is the end of the whole day. Right with the fire them story, you see. It is said that there was once a saint, you see, who was of a sixth plane. Saint, as Baba told us, is of a sixth plane, you see, who sees God face to face, continuously. So there was one who was considered to be a very ugly personality, you see. His personality was very ugly, in the sense that people, children, young, old, they all used to, poke fun at his ugliness. He was so ugly that his ugliness became conspicuous, so to say, in a crowd of millions of people, you may call it. So one day, he didn't care for all that. One day he was in a boat going from one station to another place. So while he was as one of the passengers in a boat, some youngsters there, you see, started playing practical jokes with him. Not only through teasing him through words, but they started being practical. You see, they pulled his toe while he was lying down, and somebody tried to pull his hair or turban out of him, and so forth. Practical jokes. Watching the fun, you see, the mothers started giggling, you see, and joining them were the fathers of the children, and then the brothers, and the older ones, and so forth. So the whole lot of the passengers there, and sometimes even the crew there, you see, were enjoying the game at the cost of this old man, you see, the saint. So it is said that God asked the saint, begged of the saint, God the beloved begs of his lover, he says, do something to these people, you see, otherwise I will turn the whole boat topsy-turvy and drown the whole lot, you see. I can't tolerate my child being fooled like this. So the saint replies, beloved, if you have that love for me, what will happen if you were to drown the children, drown your own children, you see, like that? If you have that love for me, for your beloved child, as you call me, can you not do one thing that I would ask you to do? He says, ask what you want. Says, instead of drowning them in the sea, drown their folly, drown their ignorance, so that they become aware of truth, of reality, you see, to the degree that you would wish them to know. In an instant the miracle was worked, you see, and people, instead of being a sort of a nullity over there, they would have been drowned and there wouldn't be any people there. All of them, to some degree, in varying degrees, so to say, became aware, you see, of the fact, the truth. And all of a sudden, they started revering the ugly saint, you see. And they became so wise that their lives were completely changed just because of the twist that the saint gave, you see. That's why such people are called saints, you see. When they see God face to face, they have the right values. Had I been in the place of the saint, I would have told God, not only drown them, but drown their seven generations, you see. Yeah. But the love of the saint, or the heart of the saint, is quite different, you see, from average human hearts. And what he pleaded to God was to just drown their ignorance rather than drown their bodies. And that worked the miracle, you see.
That's Gangi Maharaj knew Baba that way,
yeah.
The same way that
Yeah, Gangi Maharaj, yes. He was a real saint, you see. He used to see Baba face to face, you see, as he really is. He used to say that compared to Baba, you see, I am not even the lamp. You know, here in India we burn lamps with wicks, with the help of wicks, that little lamp, the little light that little lamp gives, you see. It's like my being that little lamp placed in comparison with the whole sun, you see. I'm that, you'd say. I'm the little lamp, and Baba is the sun that gives light to the whole universe. So that's what Gargi Maharaj used to say about Baba. So that's the story about the ugly saint, you see. It all started with this, that you had to wait for 2 hours at the police station, you see, to get the visa. And, well, you must have got fed up, you see. One feels so tired and frustrated, you know. One feels, yeah. Sometimes one would want that the people, you see, should get some sense, otherwise they should be out of their offices. So, this story, you see, was... Now what is the... is it on now? It so happened that just, I think, a week before Baba dropped the body, that is, a week before 31st of January 1969, I read in some magazine, you see, some story, a true story, of some Tibetan, a lama, a saint, who was revered by his followers as a master. And he had a great following. So I read a story about him. And at about 3 o'clock or so, Baba would call us, you see, at tea time there to be with him. And he'd ask us something, whether there's some news, something new to tell, any reports or anything. Even to the last day, he would ask that, you see. So I gave him this story, you see. So I said, Baba, it so happened that there was a saint in Tibet, and there was a large following around him, and they took him to be their master and so forth. And he was very well revered and loved by his people. And it's now nearly over 1,000 years that the master hasn't returned. So I said the story runs like this, that he left the room and he went away telling his people that he would return. So his bedroom is always kept tidy and the bed is prepared for his return every day. A new bed sheet is put, you see, after some 3 or 4 days, you see. They change the bed sheet, they change the pillow covers, they change everything, you see, in the room. And they keep on expecting him from day to day. And it's now 1,000 years have passed, and the generations after generations, they continue to keep the room tidy and expect him. So he has not come, but they expect that he would come back, because he has said that he would come back. So Baba just smiled and said that, well, yes. And everything was forgotten. Days passed by again, and the next day we went, or the day, or the hour after that, so many topics take place, it was all forgotten. The day of the dropping of his body, I think it is the day before or the same morning. Says he has to go. And then Baba said that, well, he'll be going. He's crucified, you see. He says that this is my crucifixion. Didn't he say that the last day? Yes. The day of my crucifixion must come, or something like that. So something, he then took a turn on his bed, you see. And then with his fingers, I was there by his side, says, I will come back, he said. There was no reference to his dropping the body or anything of the sort. So I'll come back, so. And I had completely forgotten the story of the Tibetan. Then, even though these are the last moments, he jokes with me. He says, not like the Tibetan man who hasn't come back for 1,000 years, but I'll come back. So that's the story about his coming back. Yeah. But he remembered that. He says, not like the Tibetan who hasn't returned, but I will come back.
That's Eric, the dropping of the body was a complete surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or did you?
No, I felt.
Did you have some inkling that Baba was
dropped? Oh, yes.
The work was completed. And
The way that he dropped the body was a surprise. Because he was with us, you see, all the time, chatting and this and that and all that. Everything was there, normal, as it is. As it should be, it was there, you see. There was nothing wrong. Although his body was tired and fatigued and he was ill for some time. But that was going on for a long time, you see. And it was not even a heart attack, you see, that it should... I did feel, there's no doubt about it. I told all these people, but they didn't believe. How is it possible Baba was to give darshan to the people? Very soon, in 3 months' time, he had invited his lovers from all over the world, and how is it possible for that to happen? I said, Baba is man. God has become man. Body that was born must die. The days are fast approaching, I said. I can see the signs. You don't want to believe. It's a fact. It's a fact. And so, on 31st of January, it was all over. But one little spasm and gone, finish. Right now, that's the end. You want some must stories, eh? One day we were in Mathura. Mathura is a place of pilgrimage, you know. It's associated with Lord Krishna. So we were there in that place on a must tour. And as usual, parties went out in search of musts, you see, and some stayed with Baba to be by his side. And as at the appointed time or the hour, you see, they were to collect together and then take Baba to the must. Now, you must know one thing, that whenever Baba went to contact the must, you see, he approached the must. First, the Mandali would go and see the must there and see whether the must was in mood, you see, of contact and all that. And then Baba would be ushered in, you see, in the presence of the must. That means not from some other room or anything there. Baba would be behind the Mandali, you see, just there. And the Mandali would get aside and then Baba would be facing the must. And then immediately we had to leave Baba. We had not to wait for the people who were around or anything. We were told to leave Baba immediately, you see. So that's how the must context starts. Must contact start. So in Mathura when we went, first of all, you see there were must contacts. They were there, one or two musts were contacted. But I'm giving you a different story now. Baidul comes with a story that there is a must sitting near the burning ghat. You know what burning ghat is? Where the corpses are burned, you see, on the banks of a river. So near burning ghat. Ghat is a platform, a built platform of stones and all that, where the people put their dead, you see, on a crate, so to say, a sort of a bed, improvised bed prepared there, and then they set fire to the corpse. So that's called, the place is called the burning ghat. So there, near the burning ghat, there is a must sitting on a heap of old broken pieces of tiles, you see. Tiles, ordinarily these tiles for the roof that we have, these earthenware tiles, so they are all broken and there's a heap of that. So a must is sitting there facing the river. And he appears to be a real good Mast Baba, and we would like him to be contacted by you. So Baba at once, of course, agreed to that, and we all went, followed by Dul in the direction where Dul took us. We go there, and what do we find? As usual, Baidul is there and asks, "Well, how are you? I saw right." And then a few pleasantries are exchanged. If the Mast is in a mood to just nod his head or smile or anything, we take it as a signal that it's a mood for contact. So we just get aside. No sooner we got aside, what do we find? Naturally, Baba is with the Mast. So what do we find? We find clapping from Baba. That's a signal that we have to attend to Baba. Come back. What's the matter? What do we find? The Mast has clasped his legs. Baba was standing, Mast was sitting. So just, clasping the legs, you see, of both the legs of Baba with his own arms, and took his legs and knees close to his chest. And he was muttering these words and uttering loudly later on that, "I have waited for you quite a long time. Now that you are by my side, it's not easy for you to escape me. You who have hidden from me for years together, I have found you. Oh my Lord, my Lord." He took him to be Lord Krishna, you see. And then he embraced him. He wouldn't get up. He's so fixed in his position, you see, sitting down, and Baba is standing, and Baba is helpless there. He wouldn't want any Mast to contact him, or he would contact any Mast who recognizes him. The moment the Mast gives expressions of recognition, he used to leave the Mast and go away. The work was no more there, you see. You follow? He couldn't serve him. His main purpose of being with the Mast and contacting them was what? To serve him. That is, outward signs were there, to press their bodies, to massage their bodies, to serve. But if the Mast gives outward expression of complete recognition of his divinity, how can you serve? Suppose if you want to serve me, you see, so you, I shouldn't recognize you that you are my brother, or you are Jimmy Boy, you see. Yeah, I would take you to be some person, you see, who has come for a job, or somebody who wants to serve somebody, you see, or something like that. But you should serve me incognito. Otherwise, if I recognize you, you won't be able to serve. I won't take your services. That's the thing. So that's how it was. So what do we find? Baba in a dilemma there. He didn't know how to get out of the clutches of the man, of the Mast who had recognized him. And, very gently, without being in any way disturbed, he says, "And in this advent, you know who you are? In this advent, do I not know who you are?" And then a fresh book from the rubbish, you see, there on which he was sitting, and there was a gunny sack over that whole place where he was sitting. I told you he was sitting on a heap of broken tiles and all that. It was all full of rubbish. It was the burning ghat where the corpses are burnt and all that. Brand new copy of the perfect master with Baba's picture there. "Aren't you thus now in this advent?" So Baba told us. So it was with great difficulty we had to pacify the Mast and then take Baba away from him. Then another funny thing happened was, this is one story. Dr. Donkin was driving this blue bus one day, and it was in South India, mind you. Mathura is in the north, now I'm going to south with this story. And we were at a place called Calicut in the south.
Not Calicut,
in the south. Seashore, by the side of seashore. So there we were staying at a place. So Dr. Donkin was given instructions that whenever he spotted a Mast or anything like that, before writing the wayfarers, mind you, he should be on the lookout, and if he ever were to spot somebody whom he felt that he was a Mast or anything like that, he should give a lift and bring him straight to Baba. Now what happened was that Dr. Donkin had gone to, for Baba's work, to a post office there. There he spotted a Masti Singh. And he did not know, he couldn't communicate with him. He did not know how to get him back, you see, get him seated there. So he went out searching for me. He came to me, you see, and says, "Hey Raj, would you want to come, you see, and see the Masti that is there? I have spotted one of them." So, well, I couldn't go without Baba's permission, you see. I couldn't leave Baba. So I told Baba about it, that Dr. Don has come. We used to call Dr. Donkin as Don. Don has come and wants me to accompany him. Should I go? So Baba gave me permission. "Why?" Baba asked. I said, "There's a Masti there." So naturally, Baba said, "Whosoever he be, bring him here." He means whether we find him to be a must or no, the man who has been spotted by Donkin has to be brought to Baba. That means that. So, well, I went with Dr. Donkin. And what do I find, you see? He took me, he drove me to the place, you see, where he had spotted him. And there, what I find, the man sitting there with a long beard, long robe, shabby dress, and all that. And then his back was turned towards us, you see. Far away from the road, regular road. So I crossed a field there and went there. And whom do I see there? One of Baba's people, you see. His name was Baba Das. And he had come on his own to South, you see, giving out message of Baba, you see. And he was so tired and looked so shabby with all that flowing beard and flowing hair and all that. He had the appearance of a Masti, you see. So I went there and said, "Hello, Baba Das, you are here?" He says, "Yes, how is it that you are here? Baba is here?" I said, "Yes, Baba is here. And Baba has asked you to come." He says, "Did he call me?" I said, "Yes, come on. He has said that." And we told Baba Das what was the joke, you see, that Dr. Donkin thought that you are a must there, and well, he brought me, and while I asked for Baba's permission, Baba said, "Whosoever he be, bring him." So we are carrying you there now in the bus. So we brought him to Baba, and Baba had a hearty laugh, you see. So such a thing had also happened in our must hunts, you see. This couldn't be mentioned, I think, in the Wayfarers. I don't know. I haven't read it, but I don't think so it is mentioned. Now, what else?
As Erich was talking about musts, Baba once told us this story, and he told us of this must in Bombay, who was a Madzub, which means on the seventh plane.
Not necessarily, but yeah. God-absorbed.
God-absorbed.
On different planes. Mm.
So the Madzub was utterly unconscious of his body, but those who were around him were concerned for the care of his body, to keep it well and to keep it alive. So all the time, the Madzub, the Mast, would appear to them to be as if he were asleep, not conscious and not awake. But they had to feed him, they had to take care of his body, see he had nourishment. But they couldn't wake him, they couldn't get him to gross consciousness even long enough to eat something, to drink something, to have some nourishment for his body. So they hired a fakir who used to sing very beautifully on the streets early in the morning. They would hear him sing. So they got this fakir to come and sing before the Madzub at certain times of the day. And the fakir had a beautiful voice, and he would sing with great feeling, and he would sing these lines again and again and again, standing before the mast, who was lying down, apparently asleep. And after a while, the sound of the singing with great feeling, the vibrations, as the fakir sang, It brought the Madzub down to gross consciousness for that time. And he would sit up. And they would quickly feed him. Food that was kept ready for him to have, they would quickly feed him, give him nourishment. And then, as soon as the fakir stopped the singing, when everything was done, the Madzub would go back in his unconscious state, apparently sleep state, you see. And this, Baba told us, this they would do every time. And Baba told us the story and explained when he was telling us to repeat the names of God that he had given us, and we were to sing the one that says, Tunirakar Parvadigar Ahura Mazda Allahu. That there's more verses to that. And then the other one, Hari Paramatma Allah Ahuramaz God Yasdahum. Repeated that line in song, but one must sing with feeling, with heart. And then talking about sound, and Baba told us how when somebody brought up the subject and said that they'd heard how in India, in ancient times, there were these singers who sang certain rags, song for certain rag, that would light lamps, unlit lamps that were in the room would be lighted, flame would come in. Or there were certain rags which when sung would help bring down rain. And Baba said that was right. It was the vibration, the sound, the way it was sung, and that it was true. And then he told us how in the old days, when there was a Qawwali singing before him, and there was a gathering, so these ghazals were being sung by these musicians who were called for that singing. You see, there were Qawwals, so this Qawwali program was going on. And during the singing, one lad from among those listening to the music got up, and in ecstasy of the sound, the vibrations, he began to jump. Standing, he began to jump. First he was swaying from side to side, and then he got up and started jumping. So some from among the men Mandali, one of them, got up to try to hold him down, to calm him, to make him sit down. And as he went towards the boy, Baba clapped and very sternly said, "Don't touch him. Sit down, let him be." And the musicians went on playing and singing, and the boy jumped higher and higher and higher till he was actually leaping up and down. And then after a while, as the song was ending and the musicians were slowing down in their music, the boy jumped less and less and calmed down and sat down. And everything went on as normally. And afterwards, Baba told the Mandali, the men Mandali, and that person that had that Mandali touched that boy at that time, the boy would have died on the spot. He was just... Now coming to sound, Erich wants me to tell about the bell. This is, I think, a Tibetan bell, the one that you saw this afternoon, a gong rather. This is the gong that my brother Adi Jr. found in London at some auction. And he thought it was pretty and nice, something unusual. And he brought it as a present for Baba when he came in 1968. And this gong, when you hit it, as you've heard today, it has that beautiful sound that echoes, reverberates on and on and on and on and on. I've timed it and it was over a minute and a half, just that echo reverberation of it. So later when Baba was in his room, confined to his room, in January 1969, in the latter part, the last days, latter period, the last period, and when he could not come over to the Mandali Hall to sit with the men, instead the Mandali used to be called to his bedroom. He was confined to his bedroom in the upper cottage. So he had us place that gong outside on the veranda, and we had to strike the gong whenever Baba needed Erich, immediately, the Mandali, immediately. And as soon as the gong was struck, it could be very clearly and immediately heard over at the men's side. And Erich and also Bhau, they would come immediately on the run. And Erich would drop whatever he was doing, whether there was a pen in his hand or anything. He just had to drop and come immediately on the run to Baba's bedroom to attend to Baba. So when we would strike that gong, hardly had that first gong struck, then we would see Erich running past this bougainvillea bush, and after some distance, there would be Bhau running after Erich, And then good old Kaka, although he was not told to come on the run or anything, but he had to be there when Baba wanted anybody. His whole heart and mind was concentrated on Baba, although he was not well. So this gong served that purpose of calling the men to Baba's room. So that, you see, after Mehra and all left Baba's room, the door would be closed, and this gong would be struck, so the men would come direct to Baba's room and attend to him. So this went on. Then after Baba dropped his body, the gong still hung in its usual place out on the veranda of the women's cottage, quarters. Then we went to Pune for the darshan, and when we came back from Pune, seeing the gong in its place, after a few days, it was natural for me to go over and pick up the baton, and just in memory, in reminiscences, I just gave the gong a good strike, and expecting to hear that sensitive sound, that music, that echo reverberation of the gong. And as I struck the baton, it was as flat as though I'd struck the cupboard or the floor. The gong was dead. The sound had died. And it must have happened when Baba dropped his body, because after that it was the first time I struck the gong and found there was just no sound. And there was no crack in it, because when I brought it over to Erich, he saw, and there was not the least crack, but it just died. And even that we had forgotten about till the last, the third Amartithi, when Peter Townsend came from London. Adi had found a smaller replica of that same kind of a Tibetan gong, a dinner gong. So he sent it over. And you heard it today, how sensitive the sound is, how beautiful that wave of echoing and reverberation. Would you like the sound?
No.
Yes.
Play it on. This is the baby bell, the replica of the big one that was sent with Peter Townsend when he came on the last Amartithi. And that reminded us of the bell episode, the gong episode. So Erich then asked Kaver, where was that old gong? And she brought it out from where it was stored, the dead gong. And I'll play that for you. So that's the story.
From the very beginning. All right. This is the story of 99 murders committed by a single person and how he got emancipated, you see, from the rounds of birth and death by committing the last and the 100th murder. It's fantastic, but this is a story that has been told to us by Baba. Why did he begin this story? I must let you know that. The beginning of this story is with the beginning of the Mandali trying to think over the things that Baba gave discourses on, like karma and reincarnation and the results of our action during one incarnation and so forth. So the Mandali who were around Baba, they got so involved in trying to analyze their karma and their actions. But Baba must have felt that it was time that they should stop getting themselves involved to such a degree. So he gave us this story, trying to put a stop to our analyzing our own actions with every act of ours, which would lead us nowhere. There would be no room for us to sit. Now that we are sitting here, the very act of our sitting creates impressions. And with the impressions, there are the reactions to the impressions, you see. The very fact of my telling you that such a thing had happened also creates impressions. The very fact that you all are hearing this also creates impressions, and so forth. So if you try to analyze all this, there is no end to all this. So Baba wanted us to know the fact that although there is a definite law of karma, yet it is not for man to analyze it, you see. So he tells us the story. The story begins like this. There was a murderer who had committed 99 murders. And after he committed the 99th murder, he got so horrified, you see, with the act of his murdering people. All of a sudden, you see, he realized the fact that he had involved himself to such a degree that there was no release out of the karmas of his, you see. He turned mad. He didn't know what to do, how to get release from this birth and the chain of birth and death. He left his vocation, so to say, of murdering people, and then he went in search of a master. So he goes from place to place, wandering all over India, and he has no peace of mind, no joy in life left now. The only thing was the fear haunting him as to what would happen to him. Well, after years and years of search for a master, he got so frustrated, nobody could give him peace. He lost all hopes, and he was standing somewhere, and there approaches a man asking him as to what ails him, why does he look so dejected and frustrated, what has happened? He says, "Nothing, sir, I am just in search of a master. I want some peace of mind because I am a murderer." He says, "Are you a murderer?" He says, "Yes." He says, "How many murders have you committed?" He says, 99. "You are in search of a master?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Before you go further in search of a master, will you allow me to say something to you?" He says, "Very willingly, I'll obey you, whatever you want to say." So he says, "Do one thing, stop your search. And I would like you to go and sit under a certain tree there. Be there and repeat the name that I give you." And he said, "Should I not go out for my nature's call and for my food and all that?" He says, "Yes. You go to the forest area there, that under that particular tree." There was a famous tree there and a famous spot. People in the vicinity knew that. So by naming that spot, the spot was, of course, known to the man who wanted peace. So the man on the street told him to go there, and he agreed to that. And then this murderer asks him whether he can go out, or he has to sit there all the time. He says, "All the time you have to sit at one that particular spot that he selected. And if he wanted to beg for food, if he felt hungry, he should go out in the vicinity, beg for food, and come back and sit at the very spot. If he felt thirsty, go to the riverside, drink water, and come and sit at the very spot. If he felt like attending to nature's call, go out, come back, and sit at the very spot." Right? Then the man asked the murderer whether he would like to obey this command. So the man, the murderer looked at the man and says, you look to me, you make me feel as if you are the master I was in search of, and I would like to obey you. He says, then I would like you to repeat the name. He says, what name? He says, this name. I am the master, I tell you. Repeat my name. So the name was given. Say, Baba. Repeat Baba. All the time. That was his only work that he should do, and not fear anything, that he would be absolved from the karma of all the 99 murders, and nothing would happen, and he should not feel worried. Don't worry and be happy was the motto. So, the man felt very light, absolutely unburdened, you see. No sooner he came in contact with the master, the perfect master who met him, because the time was ripe. All the time he went out in search of the master, but when the time was ripe, master approached and gave him the instructions. So this man now goes. He finds the spot there. It's a nice shady spot. It's there on the verge of a forest, there, forest area. And he sits, made his place. And he sat and he repeated the name of Baba, you may call it, all the time. Then he wanted to go out. When he felt hungry, he left the place and came back and so forth. That was his abode, that spot, whether it was winter, summer, or monsoon season, as we have the rainy season here. It mattered very little. Years rolled by, and the master had told him that he will know when he should stop repeating this, or when he should sit, or how long he should sit there. He'll come to know everything about it. Just he should follow the instructions. So he was carrying out the instructions year after year, like that. When years passed by, one day it so happened that there comes a man on a horseback. That place, which was a forest region there at the time, after passing of many years, was cleared, you see, and was made into a roadway. And those were the days when there were no cars or anything of the sort. Cavaliers would pass by, and casual horsemen would ride the horse and go over there. And that was made the royal road, you may call it. So a royal messenger comes that way one day, and he's very haughty, you know, as the royal messengers are used to be, or were used to be, and they are now even, that they feel that they are so important, you see, carrying the message from the authority. So he comes there very haughty, you see, in spirit. And he sees this man sitting there on the right on the center of the road, because that had become a roadway, and he was occupying the place. So he stops there, you see, stops his horse and says, "Hey, you, don't you know that this is the road? You're sitting in the center of the road there." He was in meditation, repeating the name that was given to him, all oblivious to all these things, you see. So again he asks him. So he was aroused. He says, "Yes, what do you want?" He says, "Don't you know that this is the highway, this is the road?" So that man took the whip, you see, and was about to whip him. This murderer, you see, who was used to all these things, all of a sudden, those impressions, you see, they took all the forms, you see, and gave him that energy. He jumped at his throat and killed him there. The 100th murder was committed. The instant the 100th murder was committed, he realized his true self, who he was. So that's the end of the story. Now Baba wants us to make out the intricacies of karma and the samskaras, which we call the impressions. So how would you want to fathom these things, you see? A man commits 99 murders and he's made to leave the vocation of being a murderer and all that, and made to sit there in meditation, and he does that for years together. All of a sudden again his impressions, you see, are aroused, and he gets into that passion, that fit, and he murders another one, and the 100th murder releases him. What is it? How will you want to fathom this, you see? Will man be able to know all these things? So the all-knowing Baba comes to our rescue and says that all that happened was a very simple thing. It so happened that this man had committed 99 murders. And what is essential to get the release, you see, or to stop the search, or to realize your true self, is to balance the opposite impressions that we are creating all the time. It's not that what we need is that all the good impressions must be there. If you have an accumulation of all the good impressions, then even then you don't get released, you see. What is needed is to balance those good impressions so that the positive impressions and the negative impressions balance and the sum aggregate total is nil. The instant the balance is obtained, you are realized. So every time our attempts are towards creating this balance of opposite impressions. So it so happened that the 99 murders that were committed there made him feel horrified, you see, with the actions that he had committed, made him go in search for the master. What happened then was the master made him select a spot, and at that spot the 100th murder was committed there. And with the 100th murder he was released from this chain of birth and death. Why? That emissary, that royal messenger, he was carrying the message from a royal command. If the message were to be delivered, 100 innocent souls were to be murdered. So what happened was that with the stoppage of this, with the 100th murder that this man committed, he counterbalanced the 100 murders there, you see. And that's how he got his release, you see, from the chain of birth and death. And he realized himself. So that's how Baba told us that we should not go enter into the intricacies of the laws of karma and all that. All that one has to know is that there is something called good and something called bad, which has no meaning whatsoever. All that matters is our love for him, nothing more than that. We shouldn't go and analyze all these intricacies and try to find out and fathom deep into it. That's the story. Brother Jim, that's the story. This is very good. Mind you, take this. This is really very good. Come here, Mani. Come here. This is Barbara. Mani, this is Barbara. Oh, this is Arni.
Interesting way Baba explained that once, that good samskaras and bad samskaras, both the samskaras are binding. Even good is binding and bad is binding. But good samskaras are like bound feet, and bad samskaras are like bound hands. If your feet are bound and your hands are free, you can free yourself. You can help yourself and undo your bound feet. But if your hands are bound, then that's difficult for you.
Did you say the hands represented the accumulation of bad samskaras?
Yes. Now, good samskaras was like bound feet. And bad samskaras was like bound hands. If your feet are bound, that's not so bad, because it's less difficult for you to free yourself, because you can do it with your hands. But if your hands are bound, then it's much more difficult for you to free yourself.
But it's necessary that you have to free yourself of both.
Yes.
Good and
yes.
Bad. That is true freedom.
Like, didn't Baba say one was... You even a golden chain, if you are bound with, you're still bound. Whether it's iron or gold or rope or... the thing, that is why he never would pay importance to that. So, if when you love Baba and you just put everything in his ocean, leave everything to him, surrender, give it all to him, then Baba said it doesn't matter what you throw in, good or bad, but don't keep it for yourself. Don't take it to be yours. That is why Baba would place so much stress on obedience. Because when you have said it is his, and then you exercise your own right and own discrimination. Because maybe to tell a lie is a bad samskar, perhaps. I don't know, I had plenty of them before I came to Baba. But supposing you give that up to Baba, you are now living with Baba or loving Baba, which is similar, and it is all his, you are no longer yours. All right, then Baba tells you, go and tell somebody so and such. And you know it's a lie. Baba is telling you to go and tell a big whopper of a lie to a certain person. Well, that's not your concern. You just have to obey, because it is no longer you're telling a lie. You're simply carrying out a wish Baba had expressed. Or supposing you come to Baba and your inclination is that you want to be alone, you want to meditate, you want to, you know, always speak the truth, have everything very spiritual. Baba could soon just clean out all that out of you. Of course, you could do all that on your own, but when you're giving it up to Baba, when you're going on that basis, then all the foundation that we have laid, all that we have built on sand, on our ignorance, then he's there, he's to direct, and we have simply to carry out.
And the principle is that the good must be wiped out by the opposite impressions called the bad, and the bad is to be wiped out by the opposite impressions called the good. So good and bad, both must be wiped out.
Or like that simile Baba gave, I think I put it in the family letter.
Yes, Baba.
And Baba said, when you're linked with Baba, when you've had contact with Baba, that is it, when you're holding to his Dhamma, he's the engine. And there's a long train of different compartments. It doesn't matter what is in those cars, trucks, what do you call them?
Carriages.
Goods wagon. Whether there is coal in one or dirt in the other or gold in one or manure in the other, it doesn't matter. That is not what you have to concentrate. You have to concentrate on staying along with that engine and seeing that you are not unhooked, not unlinked. Because that engine is going to carry you to a destination no matter what is in that carriage. And to see Baba say that half with gestures and then helping you sometime with an alphabetical signs of the fingers, but often with gestures and facial expressions, just give it to me. And then don't worry. That's why he says don't worry, because only when you consider something yours you would worry. When it is his, you don't worry. And even when he was talking, Mehra said that he was to say this verse of Kabir, Nischay aisa kijiye, sab kuch ek hi bar, sab prabhu ka mera nahi, ye nischay bichar. Nischay.
Determination.
Yes.
Let your determination be such that it be final.
Once and for all, decide.
Otherwise we resolve every year, you see. That shouldn't be your determination, that shouldn't be your resolution. You resolve and resolve finally once and for all. And what should be your resolve? What should be your determination?
That all is Baba's, all is God's, and nothing is mine. Sab Prabhu ka mera nahi. Ye nischay bichar. That should be your
resolve,
your final, definite, complete resolve. And then the other one, Mera mujhme kachhu nahi, jo kachhu hai so tera, tera tujhko saunp diye, to kya lagega mera? Mera mujhme kachhu nahi, in me there is nothing of mine, nothing that is mine. In me there is nothing that is mine. Whatever there is in me is yours. That is saying to Baba, God, is yours. Having given you yours, what concern is it of mine? Of me? So if one really can remember and do it that way, then there is no worry. I'm not saying because I can say that I can fully do it. No. But I know what... But I also know that he's so compassionate. All he would want you to do is try your best to do it. And he accepts that. Even to that extent, he accepts it. Otherwise, we couldn't do it. And such a lover, I don't think Baba's ever had. For a perfect beloved, that is why Baba once said, no, Eric, that I am not only the only beloved, I am the only lover.
Mm. Yes.
He loves us with that perfect love. But we cannot love him. Because we can only love him with our imperfect love. On the other hand, sometimes I think that supposing we were better, supposing we didn't have this weakness or that weakness. Well, in a way, Baba wouldn't want that, because he would have less material, less instrument to work on us, for us. Like, as Baba once said, I don't want just stones around me. What good would it be if you never got angry? That wouldn't serve me. But to feel anger and then not to get angry when I tell you, that is what I want. And there's, I'll just say one more little story. Talking of getting angry, how when you have to do for Baba. Once when we were in Kulu, which is up in the mountains, beautiful place up north, Kulu Valley. Dr. Donkin...
Yeah.
Sorry.
So that you can pace.
Dr. Donkin was there. He had been sent ahead to make arrangements for Baba and us to go along. So we were very few then, I think. Mera, Gavir, Meru, myself. Rana was there, but she got hepatitis and she was staying in a different house just nearby. Anyway, the thing is that... there, Baba used to allow us to have a bit of an outing. So he chose for that to have a mountain pony, a horse. And they do hire out horses, just, you know. So Baba would tell Don, Baba told Don to arrange in the town below, the Nagar, for this man to bring up his horse. So Mera and I, we could sit and turn, just trot. And even Baba sat on the horse. But holding the umbrella in one hand because he didn't like the sun, just for 2 minutes, But the horse had to come by such and such a time because we had to start out for the walk at such and such a time.